Hello, this is Cal Winslow. I want to welcome you to this, our fourth program in a KZYX special series on environmental and social issues of concern here in Northern California and Mendocino County. Our subject today is forest regeneration. This series originates with the Mendocino Institute and builds on our eco-communitarian conference held in Casper in February. The Mendocino Institute is a not-for-profit education and research center located on the coast. I'm the director of the Mendocino Institute. You can find out more at www.mendocinoinstitute.org. Our guest today is Professor Will Russell. Russell is a forest ecologist and activist, educated at the University of California, Berkeley. He's currently a professor of environmental studies at San Jose State University, where he teaches courses on forest restoration and management and coordinates the graduate program. In addition, Will has taught at the New College of California and the San Francisco State University Field Campus. He has worked as a research associate for the U.S. Forest Service, the USGS Biological Resources Division, and California State Parks. He is currently involved in research projects related to the conservation and restoration of redwood forest communities, including studies on natural regeneration, fire behavior, and the value of ecotourism. His research on the recovery of redwood forests following logging has direct applications to the restoration and management of Mendocino Coast ecosystems. Will has published numerous research papers in scientific journals and conference proceedings, including, to name just two, The Influence of Timber Harvest on the Structure and Composition of Riparian Forests in the Coastal Redwood Region, and The Effects of Timber Harvesting on the Structure and Composition of Adjacent Old-Growth Coast Redwood Forest. Will is known to many here in Mendocino County. He has a long history of work and activism in our coastal redwood forests. He's a member of the board of directors of the Mendocino Institute. He lives with his family in Santa Cruz. Today we've asked Will to speak on forest restoration on the Redwood Coast. It's a great pleasure to talk to you, Will.
Well, it's great to talk to you too, Cal, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Let's begin with this, Will. I know you have a long and a deep history here in Mendocino County. Could you tell us just a bit about how you became interested in forest ecology?
Sure, yeah. Well, I was very lucky as a kid. I was taken out to the Sierra Forest by my father, and he introduced me to the wilderness in that respect. More than anything, I was inspired by my grandparents, Lou and Skilly Russell, who lived up on the Mendocino Coast for many years. And I actually grew up east of L.A. in a city called Riverside, California, which was very, very hot and smoggy in the summers. In fact, in Riverside, we had the record for smog for many years in a row. Most of the years that I lived there, we were the greatest smog city in the U.S. So what was great was that we got to leave Riverside in the summer and go up to spend the part of the summer with my grandparents in Mendocino. And they owned a parcel of land about 120 acres in size. And this parcel of land had about two-thirds of the length of Brewery Creek on it and was very, very high in old-growth redwood forest timber. I didn't realize that as a child, how different it was from so many of the other places on the coast. But in fact, it turns out that it may be the largest or one of the largest remaining old-growth stands on the Mendocino Coast currently. So contrasting this with my life in Riverside, which was so hot and smoggy and miserable in the summer, getting up to Mendocino to spend time in these wet, drippy, mossy forests surrounded by ancient gnarled trees and all the amazing, beautiful things of the forest really, really inspired me as a child. And when I grew up, I got a chance to live up in Mendocino on a number of occasions. In fact, three different times I moved up there and lived for a total of about 9 years in Mendocino on the property that was my grandmother's. My grandfather, Lew Russell, was a poet, among other things, and was very passionate about protecting nature. I have a lot of wonderful memories of spending time with him as a child. We worked together with my brother and sisters building the abalone trail around the Russell property. And I can remember when he was getting on in years, we built a bench for him down by the creek. So when we were building the trail, he would have a place to sit and rest. He had a bad heart, which was a result of having rheumatic fever as a child. So it was difficult for him to get around the property that he loved when he was getting older. Lew Russell, as I said, was really passionate about protecting nature, and he was involved in several things that went on in Mendocino when he was there. He worked very hard to have the Mendocino headlands set aside as a state park with a number of other people, including Mildred Benioff and some other folks who were up there at the time. And he also worked very hard to fight against the clearing and development of properties adjacent to his 120 acres. And in fact, there was one particular fight over the development of a KOA campground directly adjacent to the property. And this was back in the early 1970s. The plan for the development of this campground included clearing the forest almost completely. So he went into this fight against his doctor's orders. He said his heart was too weak. My grandmother protested, but he insisted on going through with it. And in the county courthouse in Ukiah in 1972, he gave a speech against this development and had a heart attack there at the time and passed away shortly after. The good news is that the development was stopped. The bad news was that we lost our grandfather, and that was when I was about 10 years old at that time. After his death, my grandmother was hard-pressed to hold on to the land. At this time, there was a tax on properties with timber that was informally known as the standing timber tax. And essentially, along with your ordinary property tax, you were taxed on the value of the board feet of timber estimated on your property. So as I said before, this property was about 120 acres. About half of it was primary old growth, that is, old growth that had never been cut before. And then the other half of it was heavy and residual old growth. So there's a lot of value in the timber on the land. So in any case, my grandmother, Skilly Russell, was basically taxed off the property. And she had three choices as she saw it at the time. She could either sell the property, she could log the property, or she could try to find some sort of public agency that would be willing to take the property and protect it. And that was her choice, was to have it protected. And what she did is she sold the property to the Trust for Public Land, and then that agency turned it over to the state parks. Currently, the property is known as the Russell Unit and is part of officially the Mendocino Headlands State Park, though it is actually very close to the Big River State Park Unit as well. And so my grandmother, after my father's death, was given a life tenancy on the property. And so she was able to live there for many decades. She outlived my grandfather by about 40 years. And so she lived there by herself much of the time. And then, as I mentioned before, I went up and lived with her on that property on several occasions. I rebuilt an old cabin on the property and moved there when I was 18 years old to go to the College of the Redwoods. I did my first 2 years of college at College of the Redwoods up there in Fort Bragg. And then came back again and worked for the state parks for a while and lived on the property. And then A third time, I moved up there after my grandmother had moved to an assisted living facility. I lived on her property while I was working on my PhD project. In any case, the time I spent on that land with my grandmother really, I think, deeply affected me and my choices in terms of career and a lot of other things as well. She was really sort of a Italian version of Mother Nature. I can remember her coming in from the woods with interesting sticks stuck in her hair that she was bringing home and a basket full of huckleberries and chanterelles and fiddlenecks that she'd gathered, and she would come home and cook this all up for us, and it was just a wonderful time. I learned a great deal about the forest and a great deal about the plants and other organisms that live there from her.
Well, I wonder if I could just follow up on that. You know, many of the young people in the county, and I know especially on the coast, are interested in environmental studies. We have a terrific program at Mendocino High School called SONAR, the School of Natural Resources. And many of our students also go on to CR in Mendocino College and other places. Would you mind just filling us in on your formal education and how you got to the University of California at Berkeley and what you did there?
Sure. Yeah, I as I said, I did my first 2 years up in at College of the Redwoods, and when I got up there, I really wasn't sure what I was doing with my life. I'd kind of escaped from Sacramento, where I'd been living after high school for a few months and kind of doing no good with my life, and ran up to live with my grandma, and she was very nice to take me in. So I enrolled in College of the Redwoods with little idea of what I would do with it. I started out taking a lot of art classes and psychology classes and just trying to figure out what to do next. Eventually, I started taking some science classes for my general ed requirements, and found, to my surprise, that I was doing pretty well at them. In fact, I really enjoyed them. So after a couple of years there at CR, I transferred to the University of California, Santa Cruz, and initially enrolled in the chemistry program and eventually transferred into biology. So I got a degree in biology and with a focus on plant biology from UC Santa Cruz, and then stayed there and worked as a research assistant for a couple of years in ecology. After that point, I sort of took a bunch of different jobs, trying different things out, including my job at the state parks in Mendocino, but eventually decided that I wanted to go on with my education, do something different. And thinking about what I might do, I realized what was most important to me and most exciting to me was to be able to work outdoors and spend time in the woods. So I thought about different options for that. I knew I didn't want to be a forester because I'm really not interested in being involved in resource extraction. So I thought about being a park ranger or various things. And eventually I ran into this program at San Jose State University, where I'm currently teaching now. And I met some of the professors there, and it seemed like a wonderful program that would really be suited to me. So I got a master's degree there. And while I was working at San Jose State University, I was lucky enough to meet a professor at UC Berkeley named Joe McBride. He worked with me to help me on my master's project, and then as soon as I graduated from there, he took me in as one of his students at UC Berkeley in a department called the Wildland Resources Department. So I spent several years there with him working on the PhD, and it was at that point that I started doing my research on redwood forest ecology specifically, and the effects of logging on redwood forests.
And is that the work you're basically doing now at San Jose State? You teach undergrads or grads? You do field work? What do you do?
I teach both graduate and undergraduate classes. I teach undergrad classes in sustainable forest management and resource analysis. And I teach graduate classes on a variety of subjects, mainly related to development of their thesis, and also a course on environmental thought and philosophy.
All right. Well, that's terrific. And I hope, you know, that you'll look out for youngsters from the county who are interested in getting involved in work like that. I know there are many. My own son has just begun college this year in environmental studies, and I think you'd probably agree it's an area that needs all the help we can give it.
Absolutely.
Let's make a big shift here, Will. This is KZYX. I'm talking to Professor Will Russell of San Jose State University, who's going to talk to us today about forest regeneration. Will, let's go to a big question. I know you can't really do it justice in a few minutes, but let's just say, what are forests? And in that sense, how do you define or frame this subject? What's important about forests, including our own, but generally what's important about forests?
Okay, yeah, that is a big question. Fortunately, I start out one of my classes with that question, and I'll try not to get too much up on a tangent. But the whole idea of a forest is a really interesting one. The word forest comes from England. And initially, the word forest had little to do with trees. A forest was an area that had been protected for the use of the king, usually as a king's hunting ground. It turns out because the areas that weren't protected for the king were deforested so heavily, the areas that were protected for the king became some of the few areas that had heavy wood on them. So the name forest became associated with trees. Another thing that's interesting about the history of forests is sort of our attitudes about forests and how they originated. The European culture that dominates our society now, Northern European culture, initially before Roman conquest was really a forest-centered culture. The Celts. They saw their forests as sacred, they worshipped within their forests, etc. When the Romans invaded Northern Europe, as part of their program to destroy the cultures of these people, they cleared forests at an alarming rate, and also did a propaganda campaign to get the people to think of the forest as a sort of a dark, wild, and for lack of a better word, an evil place. And so we carried this attitude about forests from Northern Europe to North America when our European people came to North America and sort of implemented the same sort of program against the forests here and the native people here. So forest clearing has been a really important part of the Euro-American culture from the get-go. And I think a lot of our attitudes about forests still stem from that, and we have to really reevaluate that in light of where things are going environmentally for us. So that may have been a bit of a tangent. I think your real question is why are forests important? how are they important to us? So when you get down to it, forests are really our terrestrial life support system. What I mean by that is that we need really three things to live as an organism. We need oxygen, we need water, and we need food. Forests provide at least the first two of these. They provide oxygen for us, and they provide water for us. And to some degree, they may also provide food for us. So they're an essential part of the life support system of this planet. In addition to that, and related, forests also are extremely important for carbon sequestration. We hear more and more about global warming, and it's difficult sometimes to find positive things that we can do to combat global warming rather than just thinking of the things that we can't do. One of the things that we can do is to promote the growth of forests. Because every bit of forest that grows is carbon taking out of the atmosphere and being replaced by oxygen. Excuse me. Forests are also extremely important for erosion control, for wildlife habitat, and among other things, also for the production of timber products.
Well, that good. Let's come back to Mendocino for a minute, then what could you give a very quick summary of what is the state of the coastal forest, centrally for us, I guess, the redwood forest? You know, where are we at as far as the forests go on the west coast here?
Sure. Well, Mendocino is an interesting case. I think most people are aware who live on the coast that there was a real timber boom back 100, 150 years ago. And during that period of time, a large part of the forest was logged over very heavily and almost a sort of a timber mining, with a timber mining attitude, a cut-and-run attitude. That those forests were converted over time into industrial timberlands, eventually virtually everywhere in Mendocino was cut. And there's only a very few places in the county that were not cut. Mendocino County is sadly one of the lowest in terms of redwood counties in terms of old-growth forest protection. We do have Hindy Woods, and we have Montgomery Woods, and we have my grandma's old place, and then there's a few other small residual groves of old growth. But otherwise, everything's been cut over pretty heavily. So after that that initial harvest, where everything was pretty much clear cut, we had additional harvesting in rather short rotation. In a sense,
what does that, Will? What does that mean? Short rotation.
Well, in terms of forestry, when you cut a forest, generally we let that forest rest for a period of time, regrow for a period of time before we go back in and cut it again. And the length of rotation is defined as a time between each cut. So a long rotation, for example, might be if you cut a stand and you let it grow 100 years and then go back and cut it, that would be a very long rotation. If you cut it and come back in 20 years, that would be a relatively short rotation.
So back to Mendocino County and the state of things here?
Sure. So after this initial cut, we had additional cutting going on in short rotations, which kind of didn't allow the forest to regenerate as well as it could have. It wasn't given enough time to rest. I think it's likely that commercial timber management will be in the future of Mendocino County, but only if the resources are managed in an ecologically and economically sustainable manner. Redwood, unlike many other forest species, is remarkably resilient and productive as a species. Because it's a clonal sprouter, it can regenerate from its own stumps. So unlike a lot of different species, you don't even have to plant it after you harvest it. It grows back on its own. The trouble in Mendocino County is that the resource was essentially strip mined 100 years ago or so and managed under short rotations for several decades after that, so that it wasn't given that time to regenerate. Trees are a renewable resource, but only if you give the forest adequate time to recover after the disturbance. And current timber management techniques are much less aggressive than in the bad old days, certainly. In the bad old days, people were dragging logs down classrooms, one stream courses with Caterpillar tractors, etc. Now we don't do things like that. Things are much better in that regard. Unfortunately, we are still dealing with the legacy of those bad old days on the land. In other words, the forests have not had adequate time to recover. So whatever timber harvesting we do now is on this canvas of a badly managed forest from the past. The evidence for this can be seen not only in the quality of the environment as a result of logging, but also in the quality of the redwood timber coming out of the mill itself. The quality of that timber has gone down over the years as the trees were cut too young. So I think there's an opportunity still here in Mendocino to be a model for sustainable forest management. maybe I'm just being an optimist.
But how about some details? What's out there? What are people saying about practice? You don't have to name names, but Mendocino Redwood or the Harwoods or what's going out there? What are the opinions on how best to manage to be stewards of Redwood Forest? We hear a lot about how much better things are today. I'm not just asking for bad news, but what are people doing? What does it mean to thin, for instance? What's it mean to you answer the question.
Well, generally speaking, we've had a movement away from clear cutting. We've had a whole lot of new techniques come in for protecting wildlife, protecting residual old growth, protecting stream courses, and all of that is great. I think that if we had started by managing the forest 150 years ago, the way that we're managing them now, we'd be in decent shape. The trouble is that we're trying to manage them this way before they have recovered. And so we're taking a highly disturbed ecosystem that is not at all, has not been managed well at all, and applying a somewhat sustainable model of forestry to it. So in terms of the timber management companies themselves, I think we have seen major improvement in their practices. But that has not necessarily led to a huge improvement in the ecology of the forests themselves, just because they have been so heavily damaged beforehand. And then you asked this question about thinning, which is kind of an important one for me. Thinning, in terms of forest management, has been used for decades in the production of timber. When a timber company cuts a piece of land, they'll come back in after a decade or two and do what's called a pre-commercial thinning. They'll cut out some of the stems to release the rest of the stems and let them grow faster and straighter. And then after a couple more decades, they'll go back in and do a commercial thinning often, which is cutting some marketable trees that are a bit small but still good for the mill. And that will again, release the trees that are left over to grow bigger, straighter, and taller. And that makes a lot of sense from a timber manager's perspective. It does not make sense from an ecological perspective in terms of restoring forests necessarily. And this is an argument that has really been promoted in recent decades, that we can use some of these silvicultural methods to restore forests the same way we use them to manage forests for timber. But I would argue that these two goals, managing for timber and managing for ecological resources, are not necessarily the same. In fact, in many ways, they are very different. As I mentioned, thinning has been used to promote the growth of tall, straight trees. In terms of wildlife, tall, straight trees are not necessarily what we want. Often a twisted, funny-looking tree is going to be much more valuable for wildlife than a beautiful saw log.
Yeah, well, let's get to that. But first of all, this may not be a very well-informed question, but I have heard, seems to me regularly now, discussion of the forest as a source of biomass and the possibility of a renewed economy based on biomass. Have you come across that? How does that fit into forest management?
Well, I have definitely heard that one, and this one is a bit comical for me because it's being touted as this brand new idea. Well, biomass for fuel is the oldest type of fuel that humans ever used. We've been burning wood for fuel since before our species was even a species. So yes, you can use timber products and forest products to create heat and to create energy and electricity. But generally speaking, it's a very inefficient source. You have to burn a lot of wood to get to get heat. And certainly we have new technologies that make it more efficient than it used to be, but it's still relatively inefficient. And the reason we switched from burning wood to run steam trains to coal, for example, is because the coal is so much more efficient than the wood. And if we're trying to turn our whole economy back to a wood fired economy, I think we're going to be hard pressed to do that.
All right, this is KZYX. I'm Cal Winslow. This program today is part of a special series on environmental and social issues concerning us in Northern California and Mendocino County. Our guest today is Professor Will Russell. Will Russell is a forest ecologist and activist educated at the University of California, Berkeley, and he's currently a professor of environmental studies at San Jose State University, where he's teaching courses on, among other things, forest restoration. And he's talking to us today about forest regeneration. So, Will, maybe we'd really better get right on to that, what maybe is the heart of all of this and the heart of what your work is, if I'm not wrong. Could you tell us, I think you're becoming quite well known as an advocate of natural regeneration, and there aren't so many people, I guess, arguing for that. So maybe you could tell us in some detail what you mean by natural regeneration and why you think that more people ought to be considering that and as a way to, quote, manage forests into the future.
Sure, yeah. I think a lot of my research that I've done, beginning with my work at UC Berkeley, was focused on the impacts of logging on redwood forests. After studying that for a little while, I started to think about these second growth stands, because so much of what we have left is second growth. We have about 3 to 5% of the redwood forest that we have left is old growth. The remaining has been cut over 1, 2, 3, or 4 times. The areas that have been cut over just once, the true second growth, has been developing over a century or more at this point, and has developed a whole lot of really interesting ecological features. So I started to do research on that, just looking at second growth forests to see what their development looks like over time, with the idea that if we understood how these forests developed over time, that would help to inform our restoration processes. And I did some work up in Redwood National Park on this, and then we did a big project in Mendocino County in the Big River State Park Unit just a couple years ago with one of my grad students, Kristen Michaels, who has now gone off to University of Wisconsin to get a PhD in botany. In any case, what we did there is we looked at what's called a chronosequence of developing stands. When this unit was purchased, it was harvested pretty much up to the day that this transfer happened between the landowner and the state parks. And there had been areas harvested in it going all the way back to about 127 years ago. So we had a natural progression of stand development that we could look at all at once, at one time on this unit, and that was sort of a rare opportunity. So what we did is we went into these different stands and we did a replicated study. We ended up taking 360 sample plots, which was a lot of work for my poor grad student. She was my first student, and so I think she got the toughest project. I'm not that rough on them anymore. But it was a really, really comprehensive project in this area. And we looked at 3 different stands in each of 6 age classes, going from 0 to 20-year-old stands to 127-year-old stands. And then we compared these to 3 old-growth reference stands in Mendocino as well, with the idea that we could look at trends in forest development to see if these second growth stands were developing old growth characteristics or not, and if they were not, what were the parts of the force that weren't regenerating well, which were the parts were. And this would help us to determine if active restoration was necessary and where it was necessary, and if and when it might not be necessary as well. So we got some really interesting information from this study. Many of the characteristics that we studied did reach old growth equivalence within the time frame of the chronosequence, this 127 years of development. Stand density, for example, that's the number of trees per acre, reached old growth equivalence at about 80 years. Species diversity reached old growth equivalence about 80 years. The number of non-native species in the forest declined to zero by 80 years, and a whole variety of other factors. There were a couple of things that didn't reach old growth equivalence. One was the size of individual trees. It turns out that it takes about 1,000 years to grow a 1,000-year-old tree, and I don't know if we can really speed that up too much. And the other thing that didn't recover as well as we would have liked to see is some of the understory, the herbaceous plants growing in the understory of the forest. And so that is of particular interest to me, is this understory development and why some of these herbaceous plants are not recovering as well as we would like. So that's sort of in a nutshell what we did up in Big River. We're currently doing a very similar project in Santa Cruz County now to look at old growth here and see, and second growth compared to second growth, and see if we're reaching old growth equivalence with our older second growth in Santa Cruz, finding very similar things to what we found in Mendocino. But I think that your question may, correct me if I'm wrong, may be sort of getting at this notion of restoration as well. And how does this natural regeneration feed into that whole question of forest restoration? There certainly is the possibility.
Well, I think so, exactly, Will. And wondering about, there's more than one idea out there, right, about restoration. Restoration, people are more interested in it today than they have been in the past. So, yeah, so let's have a little bit more about what you call natural regeneration.
Absolutely. Well, maybe I should start by sort of talking about some of the other ideas of restoration, too, so we have something to compare to. Initially, the first forest restorations that were conducted in Redwood Forest were conducted up in Redwood National Park after the purchase of that park. And forest restoration at that time generally meant a removal of roads, putting roads to bed to eliminate sediment sources, and often a whole lot of tree planting. In recent decades, the meaning of forest restoration, the practice of it, has changed to really include a sort of a heavy prescription of forest thinning, very similar to the pre-commercial or commercial thinning that we were talking about earlier. And in some cases, people have argued for funding forest restoration projects through the sale of timber cut during the restoration project. And for me, this seems like a slippery slope for economic reasons. For ecological reasons, it also seems dangerous and a bit simplistic in its thinking. The idea is that if you go in and thin the forest, it's going to open up the canopy, let more light into the forest, and that will cause the remaining trees to grow bigger, faster. And we know that this works. We know that thinning forests cause the remaining trees to grow bigger, faster. But what this idea neglects is the effects of reentering the system to log it again, these effects on the rest of the ecosystem. For example, these understory species that I was talking about, these redwood-associated herbaceous species, the trilliums and orchids and so forth. Those species, which were some of the last things to recover after harvesting, are incredibly sensitive to both sunlight, and to soil compaction. which are two things that are altered by reentering the system. So I don't think that we really understand the redwood forest well enough to be making such big decisions about how to manage them, essentially. In addition, redwood forests are very different from other forest types. This type of restoration, the thinning restoration, has been commonly done in the Sierra Nevada, in pine forests in particular. Pines are sun-loving species, and so thinning the forest in those cases, or doing other things to try to get sunlight onto the forest floor, makes a lot of sense. Redwoods, on the other hand, are shade-tolerant species, and they don't really need sunlight to regenerate at all. They regenerate just fine without it. So there's no really real pressing issue that suggests that we need to thin the forest for ecological restoration. I think these arguments are really based on economics rather than on ecology. So what I'm suggesting is that we take a, maybe not an entirely hands-off approach, but a very thoughtful approach to any active management we do in restoration. There are certainly things that we can do actively that can help. Removing roads, as I mentioned before, can be really important. Roads, logging roads that have been badly built, can cause mass wasting. They can cause erosion into streams for decades if they're not dealt with properly. Other types of active management that can be very important are the removal of exotic species, for example. So there are things we can do actively, and I think it's understandable that people want to do something to help restore the forest, and I think that's a positive thing. We don't want to lose that feeling in the community, but we have to be careful about how we do it, because the forests have been so badly damaged. They've been so badly disturbed that we need to sort of step very thoughtfully when we go about doing active management, especially when we look at the amazing regenerative ability of the redwoods. Many people who live on the coast will often take walks in places like Russian Gulch and Van Dam State Park without even realizing that most of those parks are second growth. Second growth at 100 or 100 to 150 years really begins to not only look like an old growth forest, but to function like an old growth forest. And I think it would be really tragic if we went in right at the time that these forests were beginning to recover and log them again under the rubric of restoration.
I've seen that the Save the Redwoods League has taken a sort of renewed interest in restoration. I think its history was more about saving individual groves and trees and bits of forest and so forth. That might be a positive sign. I see that they're active up in the Willits area near the Skunk Train tracks. I think they've been involved at Montgomery Woods. Is there room for more activity like that in the coastal redwood forests? And do you know much about what kind of outlook they have on these issues that you're talking about?
Well, yeah, Save the Redwoods League is a really interesting case, as is the Semper Virens Fund. They're two related agencies. Both of them started about 100 years ago. The Semper Virens Fund is sort of the southern version of the Save the Redwoods League. Semper Virens Fund is housed here in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Semper Virens Fund actually was instrumental in the creation of the very first state park, Big Basin State Park. And both of these organizations, as you said, have been involved primarily in protecting old growth forests for most of their 100-year lifespan. But as the old growth, it was either protected or running out, both these organizations started thinking about purchasing second growth forests. And the question is, at this point, what is to be done with these second growth forests once they have been purchased. Both organizations are very interested in managing forests to develop old growth characteristics over time. And I think that both organizations as well are considering all different options in terms of how to do that. The Save the Redwoods League, for example, has a pretty big research budget. They put a lot of money into forest research. They funded a fair amount of my research, and they've also funded research for some of the luminaries like Steve Sillette up at Humboldt State University, and they have funded research on the effects of thinning on forest restoration, and they've been doing some of that research on lands that they have purchased. So I think it's still an open question what direction these two organizations are going to go with this regard. And my hope is that they're really going to take the perspective that more research is better, and the more we know before we go in and start doing heavy manipulations, the better.
Just one more local issue, a local controversy, and that's the conflict up at Richardson Grove. I don't know if you've noticed that at all, but the Caltrans, I guess, wants to widen the road there, and opponents are afraid, even if they don't cut down trees, that they will just bring more disruption into the ecosystem there. Do they have a case? I don't know if you want to get involved in this or not.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, because I don't know how many people remember our old Governor Reagan, who went on to be president, and he made a famous statement years ago that if you've seen one redwood, you've seen them all. Now, this is clearly a guy who hasn't seen very many redwoods, because they're really a very diverse species. Anyway, he made this statement at a time when there was a plan to build the existing Highway 101. 101 used to go up through the Avenue of the Giants, and they planned this big split lane highway through there. And when people protested this, he said, "One, you know, you've seen one, you've seen them all." Well, I think we're dealing with the same issue again, essentially. What is the value of the forest? You asked that question earlier. How important is it to us? How important is it to have a functioning redwood ecosystem? Is it important enough that we would consider limiting our highway building projects, for example? So far, as a society, we haven't really made that choice. We've generally speaking, we've chosen developmental concerns over ecological concerns, and I think this disagreement is right along those lines.
Well, one more time, let me say that this is KZYX. My name is Cal Winslow. I'm with the Mendocino Institute. Today we're talking with Will Russell about forest regeneration. Will Russell is a professor at San Jose State University in environmental studies. One thing I've worried about in the little work that I've done on this subject is that the scale of our efforts often seems rather small, and because the world in a way is still big and the forests are still big. I remember being quite surprised to come across a dispute in the 1940s when a liberal congresswoman from Southern California, Helen Hagen Douglas, essentially proposed nationalizing the redwood forest, bringing it all under state and national government. Now, of course, this was anathema to many of the people who lived up here, and I suppose it would be more so today in the sort of anti-government climate that we live in. Following the 30s, people thought on a large scale, and her feelings were, and it seems to me there's something to be said for them, that the forests were going to be taken down, and not only would it be difficult to ever get them back, but we would be taking away a great treasure for the people of California, especially at a time when she also saw that the population was exploding out here and that people needed places to get away, and we needed green belts and things like that. Just on that subject, I know you've also done some work on this. We have here in Mendocino County, and I'm not asking you to jump into the controversies here, but we have 55,000 acres of state-owned redwood forest. Could you see, from your point of view, any value in looking at that forest instead of looking at it as a way to practice and think about an experiment with logging as a place where we could experiment with regeneration?
Well, yeah, that's certainly a really interesting question. As you said, I'm a little afraid to jump in the Jackson State Forest fray. I think there's certainly room for looking at using forests in a different way, using public forests in a different way. I think those forests that we have protected as parks and preserves should stay as parks and preserves, but the experimental forests that we have one here in Santa Cruz County as well, Soquel Demonstration State Forest, I think could be used, and the intention was, when they were created, was to use them truly for cutting-edge forest research, and I don't mean that as a pun. Maybe looking at some research that doesn't include cutting edges might be a good idea. And having said that, I think there is still room in the redwood region for some timber management for commercial purposes. I don't think we have to choose one or the other, and I think it's possible that we could continue having sustainable and maybe develop truly sustainable forest management practices on the coast. But to do that, it's going to take a real change in the way that we look at forests and the way that we manage them. And I can't think of a better place to do that than in the state forests. Certainly looking at some of these natural regeneration topics that I've talked about, that would be an excellent place to do that.
Well, Will, we're starting to run out of time, and there are two things that I wanted to ask you about, and I'll have to probably ask you to cut the answers a bit short. But, you know, we live in hard times. There's a lot of unemployment, and really there's a lot of suffering here on the coast that I think we don't like to talk about too much, but there is. And in this context, I think people are afraid, and I think people look back to a time when there was work in the hills and there was fishing in the sea, and looking back at that in a positive way, they're afraid of the idea of leaving the land alone, of leaving the coast alone at all. It makes them think that maybe we're asking for just things to get worse, but I don't really look at it that way, and I'm not afraid of the idea of parks and preserves and so forth, but I wonder what you think. You must have to talk to this about your students. Is there, what about our communities? Can restoration and protection be good for our communities, or does it mean really taking away jobs and taking away traditions and ways of living that people cling to, and in some cases quite rightly so?
Well, I think the bottom line is those things have been taken away already to a large extent. We've lost the fisheries for the most part. We've lost the mills for the most part. We've lost the trees that we took the mills for the most part. So unfortunately, we're in this situation where those resources have been degraded to the extent that they're not producing very well. The best thing we could possibly do to get those resources to start producing again well is essentially to give them a break. We overfished to some extent, and we destroyed our fisheries through very bad logging practices. We over-harvested our trees to a large extent, and so they're not growing back as well as they could. If we could really start to employ some sustainable management practices, then we might get back to a point where we could start really using those resources again.
And Will, one last thing. I know your heart is really in this work, and I know that there are lots of young people in our county and in California and all around the world, really, but there are lots of young people around here who like the woods, who'd like to be involved with nature and the outdoors and so forth. What do you think? Is trying to find a way into environmental studies and environmental work, is that something that young people should consider?
Well, I certainly say yes. I think if we're gonna prosper as a species, we're gonna really need to start thinking about how to manage our resources and how to manage our environment. And no matter what the political climate is right now, I believe that those issues are gonna move more and more to the fore in terms of our society, because they're just gonna have to. And the environmental field is growing while many other fields are not, and I think that is probably going to continue into the future, and there's a whole lot of different types of work that need to be done in that field beyond the type of resource management that I do.
Well, thank you very much, Will. It's really been a pleasure, as always, to talk to you, and good luck to you and your students and your work that's coming.
Great. It was great to talk to you, Cal.
And I hope that listeners will return next week at this time, when our guest will be Sasha Lilly. She's an economist and the author of Capital and Its Discontents, and she's the producer of the program Against the Grain at KPFA, and she's going to be talking to us about economic issues on the large scale and here in California and in our own lives. This series continues to be broadcast over the next weeks, and will include future discussions of ocean protection, of economic and cultural diversity, and of much more. Thank you for listening.